It's good to have you back, though.
Oh, it's good to be back. The vacation was what I needed. It was great because going into it with the expectation of like, hey, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to purely relax. And I have no expectations of sightseeing or, you know, anything else. This was going to be my lazy, just decompress, you know, vacation. And a cruise turned out to be a pretty good avenue for that, and also a not so great avenue for that, which we can get into in a little bit if you want to. But having that time off was very beneficial for my mental health and my well-being. And I missed my family a lot, but they were having tons of fun with my mom and my sister. So they got to have their own little mini vacation for mom and dad. And everyone's back together. Everyone's happy. And I just feel a lot better.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I am interested to hear, like, what the heck it was like. You said first cruise, right?
Well, this is my second cruise. I guess my first cruise as an adult who actually is more observant and doesn't care just about his own little bubble, I guess. And being on vacation, I should have cared about my little bubble, but having your eyes kind of, you know, your eyes open just more and more as you get older, and they start closing again. You start narrowing down your vision just to, you know, like your little sphere of influence and what affects you directly. But in paying attention to everything, a cruise is a very interesting thing because you pack a lot of people onto a boat together where you're going to run into the same people. You know, just the odds are very, very in your favor that you will run into people over and over again. And the people that you usually remember are the ones who are usually a little more noticeable for various reasons, whether it be their behavior or, you know, just kind of the way they carry themselves or, yeah, a lot of things. And you can't get away from them. Like, there's no way to get away. So I think it was, like I said, a social experiment. Like if I was a sociologist and I was on the cruise, I would have loved to be there because I would have just been writing stuff on my notebook all day. But it was fun. I mean, for what it is, you know, I know you put in here that it's like a floating buffet trip, and that is so true. There is just food everywhere. Food is all over the place. And the other thing that's all over the place is alcohol. And food and alcohol and a bunch of people means a bunch of drunk, fat people walking around on a boat. And that's essentially what a cruise boiled down to for me, was a bunch of fat people walking around a boat, and half of those fat people were drunk, and a quarter of those fat people had kids. And, you know, props to, you know, the cruise people, because they put the back of the boat is kind of like the kids section, right, with like the buffets with all the desserts and stuff, and kind of the front of the boat is more geared towards like adults, so they try to separate you as much as they can. Like I said, it's a boat, and when you have to, you know, actually eat at the dining room in the back of the boat, you're going to run into some kids at night. And the kids were the least of my concern. Like, I actually didn't really care about any of the kids running around. It was all the adults. I mean, people just got to get their shit together. And there were a lot of people who just, I don't know, they were letting it all hang out. And I guess it's what a vacation's for, but I didn't need to see that.
Yeah, so, I don't know. When I went on a cruise last, I guess I would say I had some blinders on. Like, I was at a young enough age where I didn't really notice those sort of social, you know, like situations that I would take note of those sort of things. But I definitely remember the floating buffet thing. I do remember the sort of thing you're talking about where, I mean, this thing is only the ship is only what, a fifth of a mile long, you know? I mean, so, and you're on it with 2,000 people. So guess what? Yeah, you're going to see the same people over and over and over again. And you're totally right. The people that you sort of hate stick out in your mind, and you see them again and again, and you're like, oh, not this person again, not this person again. And, you know, you just kind of want to distance yourself from them. But shocker, the farthest you're going to get away from them is maybe a fifth of a mile. So,
well, I could have jumped off the boat, but I feel like that would have been a poor decision, you know?
Yeah, you have a better decision quality than to try to pull a stunt like that.
Yeah, but the other thing I was going to say is the way I treated this cruise was kind of, and I know you mentioned, you know, earlier that you're kind of on cruise control just with, you know, your life and work life right now. This was kind of, you know, it's a horrible pun, but cruise control for my vacation. very much, you know, let's just hold your hand and walk you through all the things and we'll take you to this place and that place. And knowing what I know now after doing the cruise, the way I view it is it's a floating buffet for food and it's also a floating buffet for vacation. So you get to try a little bit here and try a little bit there, you know, but the difference is you can't go back whenever you want. But now I kind of know, I'm like, okay, if we go back, which we definitely will go back to the Bahamas because it's beautiful down there. It was really nice and warm. The beaches are amazing. The water is great. There's tons of, you know, stuff you can do with snorkeling. And it was just a really beautiful place to be and perfect, you know, time of the year for us to go. But now I know that, okay, I'll go to this island and I'll hang out on this island because out of the cruise, you know, we were there for a day and we had to be back, you know, by 5 o'clock. I would have rather just stay on that island and not go to the other two little places that we went to. It's like, now I know, all right, I'm not going to get back in line for, you know, the bread pudding because it was super runny. I'm going to go back and get, you know, the prime rib because I know that's at least fresh. So I got to kind of try a little bit of everything. And now we just have a better idea for planning our own vacation the next time. So
that's cool. So you recall I mentioned something about the Bahamas having limos as taxis. Did you happen to see any there?
I did see like a lot of like black cars. And not necessarily limousines, but there were definitely a lot of black cars and kind of like the black car service. That's what, like, when you see like a line of taxis or where you used to see a line of taxis, you'd see a line of black cars. And the difference now is that, you know, there aren't really as many taxis, it seems. And the places where we stopped, you know, at port, there are definitely, you know, the most taxis, but you didn't really see them like out and about. I didn't see them all over. And since we didn't have a lot of time to go anywhere, we actually didn't get to venture too far into any of the islands. And whenever we did, it was kind of on like a tour. So we were on a bus with a bunch of other people. But I can't really confirm or just validate for you that there are still limos everywhere. I only saw maybe one. But like I said, a lot of like big Cadillac Escalade type things or like the Chevrolet equivalent of those. I saw a lot more of those as taxis than I did limos.
Got it. Okay, cool. So I see here you were also in a little bit of follow-up, I guess, disappointed with last week's episode regarding online school discussions. So I have to admit before we dive into this that this didn't cross my mind. Big surprise there, but I don't have kids and I know you probably have a lot to add here because I think your kids, if I recall correctly, do this. I'm interested to know a little bit more about this because I have to admit I'm pretty, naive here. I don't know a lot in this area. So tell me a little bit about it.
So the only thing I would say is I'm not disappointed. I'm just, this is a whole section that kind of got like glossed over was the space of online education, right? You guys talked about all these things that they're using in the classroom and how to manage these things and all this technology coming out around it, but that's still all with kids in a physical classroom together. And the virtual classroom seems much more interesting to me when we talk about like technology and education, because we've talked about it like once or twice where we'll start discussing something and the idea of college comes up and then the idea of a trade school comes up and then the idea of an online trade school comes up. And with technology these days, connecting people from all over the world, giving you access to all this vast knowledge and connecting people all over, why can't we also bring a school setting online? And that's what a lot of, you know, companies try to do. So I can say that myself, I've taken self-paced like online courses and it's gotten much more interactive and much nicer. We've mentioned Treehouse a couple times, right? And I have been a Treehouse member, a student. My subscription is on hold right now, which is awesome because you can, you know, put it on hold for 6 months and then pick back up for 6 months. So if you're going to be busy, you know, you're not paying every month for something you're not using, but being able to kind of like self-paced pick something up and learn, just say like a new language, like, oh man, I really have to brush up on, you know, Python. So you sign up for Treehouse and for the month, you just cram a bunch of Python, you know, and then you learn a bunch of useful skills and then cool, you're done, right? You can pause your subscription again. And let's say, oh, I need to learn, you know, JavaScript for this next project. So you go on there and you can get a crash course on JavaScript. And the thing that I think I wanted to touch on, especially when it comes to online school, is how are you making it interactive? And I think that's, it's easy to put a book online and say the book's now online. And with technology and education, it's like, how do we bring a classroom environment? Because the benefits of a classroom environment are, hey, you know, one-to-one real-time communication, the social aspect of talking to other students and group projects, things like that. How do we bring all that online in a way that doesn't try to just emulate the experience, but takes all the best parts of the classroom, the best parts of online, and merges them into one happy new thing? So to answer your question, me knowing more about this is, I can say that, yes, I've taken online classes and I can see the benefit, and especially over traditional schooling, where it's like I have to go to school at a specific time and do this at a specific time. And as I'm an adult and as I have kids, it's much harder to do that. As far as my kids go, they were homeschooled before they went to public school. And my wife has her major in early childhood development, so she was very much kind of the best teacher to put in the classroom with them at home. But they very much had like an online kind of tool that they could sign up for, whether it be for reading, for math, for what have you. And they could, you know, kind of at their own pace, just go on a computer and gamify the whole thing and just take this course and learn whatever it is. And now, you know, they're just tools for research and reference. But I think what we'll see kind of later on is that the physical classroom will start blurring more into a virtual classroom, where it doesn't necessarily, you know, you don't have to be at a physical place. You just have to have access to the internet or access to the classroom. So I was disappointed that you guys didn't really touch on that, but I think it also merits its whole, an entire episode of its own. So I didn't, you know, dock you too many points for that.
Okay, fair enough. I'm kind of curious to what impact you think, and I mean, we'll definitely have an episode on this. I think it's, like you said, it's worthy of it, but what impact do you think like social interactions, you know, are kind of have when kids don't get to interact with each other in a physical setting because they're doing something like online school? Do you think that really hinders concepts learning and mastery when you can't say, hey, you're on Teams or things like that? Or do you think it doesn't really impact them because there are other rich ways they can learn?
I think there's more than one way to skin a cat. And with my kids being homeschooled, right, they were in the classroom at home for most of the time, you know, with their siblings and with their mom, right? And how do we build social interaction off that? Well, it's like, okay, you put them in another activity that is going to be not based on, let's say, the classroom, right? Because kids, like, you're not going to get, you know, a bunch of kindergartners together and say, do a group project together, right? You can get them to share crayons and stuff like that. And they're going to learn that, you know, by interacting with other, you know, kids outside of even the classroom. So I think building social skills doesn't just have to be in the classroom. And I think that's kind of a very, very minor place, right? Because when you talk about teacher to student ratios, like, we can get into a whole argument there, but it's tough because you have a bunch of kids in a room together without a lot of supervision. And I think things can go south really quick, right? Just having other kids be mean without, you know, anyone interrupting or interjecting or kind of intervening in the situation. But anyway, I think like sports is a big one, or, you know, physical education is a big one, because you have to go outside for that. There is no virtual equivalent of, you know, online sports. Now, esports is a different thing, but kids shouldn't be in esports until they at least hit, you know, that awkward teenage stage, and then they can stay in their room and play video games all day. I don't care. But when they're younger, they need to go outside. They need to, you know, run around. They need to get out all this energy. So sports is a big one. And just going out and going to a park, you know, going to a park, you're going to run into all sorts of different social situations, right? Whether that be sharing a toy or having a conflict or someone, you know, getting in front of you in the slide line or someone taking the swing that you wanted to take. And it's, I think that's more valuable for those kids to see that. And definitely happens as on like the playground at school. But I think there are other ways to do that, and you don't have to be at school to learn those things.
That's fair. I mean, and I just was kind of curious as a kind of early question what your thoughts were on that, but that's cool. So in a little bit of follow-up too, you also said you have some follow-up here on your like GTD lifestyle or your productivity. I know we mentioned before you were using Things for personal use, and OmniFocus was personal, but now you're like switching away from it towards Things. Is that correct?
Yeah. So where we last left off, I had converted to Things for personal life and OmniFocus for work life. And this follow-up is in here because I've been using Things for a couple months now, and I still like Things. It's a very pretty application, and I think a lot of it is heavily focused on the UI. And with that, there are things that I miss, like keyboard navigation. And Things does have a lot of shortcuts, and there are ways to get through things, but God, I would love to just be able to select a task and then be able to bring up like a tag entry and type in multiple tags. But that seems to be impossible without hitting, you know, space and to expand the task and then tab a bunch of times to get over to the tags field and then type in what you want. Because the tags menu that they have only has, you know, like UI checkboxes that you can check and say like, yep, this task should have this check, this tag and this tag and this tag. It's like, I just want a tag entry system. And I want to be able to select multiple things and move them around or indent them. And there are definitely things I miss about OmniFocus. And I want really bad to go back to my OmniFocus life, but I still love the separation of work versus personal. And knowing that if I open OmniFocus, I am working. And if I open Things, I am not working. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm anxiously awaiting the OmniFocus update so I can jump into Things. Or sorry, jump out of Things into OmniFocus.
That was a good one.
I know. So I don't know. That is just kind of a little follow-up here that Things is still a great application. And when I originally got it, I got it for Alex. So thanks to the wonders of family sharing, I was able to install it on my computer as well. So I still use it. I still like it. But I definitely miss OmniFocus, and a lot of things that I miss from OmniFocus. One is the keyboard navigation. Reviewing was also great, like setting, you know, projects to review at a certain time. There are things where Things is much simpler. It's definitely not geared towards, you know, people who are kind of a little too meticulous about their tasks. And having gone through the OmniFocus lifestyle of being super meticulous about my tasks, trying to simple it down is tough. It's hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in this situation before where you're trying to develop a solution that works for personal and work life. And it's tough because you get really good at something for one and then you miss, you know, that sort of thing when you're, you know, in the other life, if you will, you know, and so I don't know. Yeah, I'm also eagerly awaiting OmniFocus 3. So we'll see when that comes down the pike, hopefully in the next couple of months. And I'm sure you and I will have another discussion about it.
Oh, definitely.
Cool. So I know this week you wanted to do a little kind of just a tech stuff episode. So I don't know exactly where we'll go, but we just kind of want to give a little update on you know, where we're at. I know one of the first things you put in here, Adam, was just our latest kind of tech struggle. So I'm kind of curious, where does this question come from? There must be something in your mind that you're struggling with. So what's the struggle in Adam's life?
I'm going to be 100% candid with you, is that when I was tasked with, you know, making the outline for this week, I didn't have it in me to look at the topics and choose something and dig into something that was going to have like some homework behind it, right? Doing a little bit of research, this and that. So I was like, I don't know. I'm still, you know, on vacation from podcast stuff or getting back from vacation. And just like with like my move goal and with work, like I didn't like speed right back into it. I didn't like, all right, you know, 0 to 60, like as quick as I can. I kind of like eased back into the life, right? From vacation. I'm kind of doing the same with the podcast here. So I really didn't know what to talk about. And these three questions, I just put in there. So as far as struggles go, you asked where that question come from. It just out of my butt. That's where it came from. I mean, to be honest, that's where it came from. But I'll tell you what my latest tech struggle is. And it came up after I wrote this question down. So that's just trying to show you that there is no, like, there is no premeditated, you know, topic here. But the latest tech struggle I have is trying to use an iMac as an extended display with a MacBook with two USB-C ports without resorting to a hub for display, Ethernet, and file transfers.
Okay.
So essentially what I want to do is have two USB-C hookups into a MacBook, one being power and one being Thunderbolt, and then the other part of that Thunderbolt into an iMac, which is also running, you know, it's running its own thing, but then put that in target display mode and carry everything over the Thunderbolt bus for the MacBook. Like I said, that being the display, for extending the display, I want sound to also mirror over there as well, which we'll consider DisplayPort because that's the protocol it's going to use anyway. And networking. I want a hardwired connection going through the Thunderbolt bridge. And I have it working, but my struggle right now is getting the uploads to perform with a degree of, I guess, reliability or just, I don't know, to actually fucking upload because they upload so freaking slow. And I don't know if it's a problem that I'm like taxing all the bandwidth on this, you know, on this channel, which it's 10 gigabits. I mean, even if I'm going down to, you know, Thunderbolt, like Thunderbolt 1 or Thunderbolt 2 even, I don't feel like I'm getting choked on bandwidth, but there is a lot of stuff happening there. But I just don't know if I'm prioritizing the traffic the right way. So that's my struggle right now. Do you have any insight for me, Lou?
Well, first of all, I didn't even know Target Display was supported still anymore. I thought that was something that went away like years ago. So, wow, that's news for me.
If you have a non-Retina iMac, it definitely still works. And I have a non-Retina iMac that I'm trying to do it with.
Got it. Okay. So that's about the time I thought it went away too, because it was my thought that it was like, I don't know, 2012, 2013 this went away, but I guess the Retina iMacs were like what, 2015, 2016, so it's I'm a couple years off, but that makes sense. So yeah, that's a challenge, I'm not gonna lie. I don't really have any head scratching is like right at the moment that I'm like, oh my God, this is your solution. But that's a tinkering project for sure. I'm going to just kind of hijack you for a second here and say that mine is nowhere near as complex, but that I'm sort of in this inter-struggle right now that is similar to your OmniFocus versus Things struggle between two pieces of software. And so my latest tech struggle is sort of between Markdown editors and how I manage text, and the two pieces of software I'm kind of dueling against each other are Ulysses versus Drafts version 5. And one is a little bit more casual while one's more formal, and one, you know, Ulysses to me is a very long form editor. Very, you know, I want to sit down and write something. It's great. Don't get me wrong. And it's supported on the Mac and iOS. And so it's across all my platforms, which is cool. Drafts is limited, at least at this point, on iOS, but in time they may bring it to the Mac. They just have said that, you know, that is the thought, and a lot of the back end has been re-engineered to support that. But, and so I kind of, because I don't generally do a ton of long form writing, most of what I'm doing in Ulysses is half page or less. It sort of, in some ways, is overkill. And so I am reevaluating my thoughts and could I survive on Drafts alone? So, we'll see. That's my interpersonal conflict right now.
So I have some questions for you, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
Is this exclusively a Markdown editor that you're looking for?
No, so Drafts isn't always Markdown. I mean, it is something that, you know, you can do Markdown with it, but I really like the triaging my sort of, you know, text and being able to kind of do exactly that, draft something and then just pop it out to whatever application. But of course, Drafts supports Markdown as well, which is useful for things like show notes, you know? And so, you know, I know there are free editors and things like that out there, but I'm not going to lie. One of the biggest things that has impressed me with Drafts 5 is the developer has done some work on the back end to, I don't want to call it hack, but essentially worked around, I think, like an API that Apple has where when you do voice dictation, normally Apple software, like after I think like 45 seconds or something like that, cuts you off and says, okay, cool, that's as much as you're going to take for now. But the way he's developed the app, it extends that 45 seconds to unlimited. And so he must be like, you know, ending a parse and then picking it back up or something like that cleverly. I'm not exactly sure he's doing that, but that is extremely useful because there's sometimes where I can stop and think and, you know, I could be in a car or something like that and trigger it and just like let it run for 10 minutes and just, you know, collect my thoughts again, pause, and then keep talking. And, you know, when I get somewhere, get out of the car, there's like a 3 paragraphs written about something I needed to reply to. So I don't know. I really like that feature too. I think that was really innovative and big. But to answer your like question about Markdown, is it 100% Markdown? No, it's not 100% Markdown for me.
Okay. So it's fair to say that Markdown is definitely seems like it's one of the more important things, but you're also looking for other features outside of that, because I'm trying to narrow down, like, do you just need a Markdown editor or do you need just a full featured text editor?
Yeah, I don't need a full featured text editor. I mean, so I have Pages on my Mac and
that's not a text editor. That's a word processor. Totally different.
I'm getting there. So I have Pages on my Mac and I had quote unquote Word on my Mac. And I recently let that quote unquote subscription expire and said, you know, hey, thanks, but no thanks. I don't want to pay the exorbitant fees for Microsoft Office. But so, you know, I do want some ability to write a document in a text editor and have it convert to a word processor if I need that feature. I'm not always going to need that feature, but I like the ability to triage in something as simple as Ulysses or Drafts and then, you know, get to a word processor from there. But 98% of the writing I'm doing probably isn't something of that caliber or level. And so that's why Drafts is lucrative to me, because it's kind of sits at the most casual level of the writing spectrum. And then there's something like Ulysses, which is still sort of in the middle, I guess I would say, and it's a little more formal. And then there's, you know, the highest end, you know, like word processing to me, which it would be silly to write anything like Markdown or something like that, and that you would have a real hard time doing it, but you could. And you would just, you know, I mean, to go to something like Pages is just overkill for that. So for me, I don't know, I'm kind of my writing trends are headed more towards the casual side.
Okay. Because there's tons of text editors out there. And when I look at a text editor, I just look for kind of like all around compatibility, because I want a Swiss Army knife when it comes to text editors. I want something that's going to be able to handle everything that I want. And I actually don't really care too much about features, because with text, I feel it's easy to take text down wherever, right? Like you can bring up anything that will accept text input and then you can toss that wherever you want. And most things, especially when you're dealing with text, it's pretty easy to import from one place to another. So as far as like your problem or your situation, the way I would solve it, this is just me projecting, is I would have like a workflow set up, right? Where I would either bring something always into this one place, like when I need to capture, whether it be audio, whatever, this is how I capture it. And then when I need to, you know, actually edit something for an email, this is where I edit it. Or if I need to do something for like show notes, this is where I edit it. So I'm trying to get a feel for like what you needed to do to see if I could offer you any suggestions. And the short answer is like, I probably can't. I don't really have too much to offer you. I know that there is a really good Markdown editor that it's a guy I followed for a long time, but Brett Terpstra. And he has that app called Marked, and it's very much for Markdown. And I think Mark 2, I forgot when this version came out, But Brett's a really smart guy, and he's a pretty efficient, you know, programmer. So I know that he's raved about this application. I hear tons of positive reviews, so I sent it to you. But it might be something looking into, especially with a nice little free trial, just to try to see if, like, that's something you want to do for your markdown editing. Because for me, like, I like a Swiss Army knife because I don't care about all the features. So I just want something that, hey, I need to write a bash script. Okay, cool. I can throw that in here. Hey, I need to write some Python. Okay, cool. I can throw that in here. So I use BBEdit for all of my text editing needs when it comes to taking it down everywhere. And then I use just the built-in notes app because I can say, hey, virtual assistant, take a note, blah, 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 blah. And there it is. Or I can bring open that note and, like you said, bring up dictation, just start spewing information. But I don't ever know that I've run into the 45-second thing, but I guess I don't have a lot to say when it comes to notes.
Yeah, it's something that I will often say 2 or 3 sentences and then pause and, you know, think about my thoughts and maybe develop my next thought real quick. And there's things that, from a time limit perspective, you know, when you're speaking to these assistants, you generally have to enunciate punctuation. And so you kind of get hung up on having to do that mentally. And so I get hung up when I have to say, you know, new paragraph, new line, you know, bullet, or, you know, just different things like that. And so being able to pause and think about that stuff as I'm saying something is cool. And so I do use that stuff sometimes more when I'm doing something long form, which is going to be cool. But, you know, it's, I don't know, it's not for everybody. It's just something that I enjoy. But I do have a question about your target display setup, though. I guess I don't know that I have a lot to offer, but I do wonder, what is the intent of doing this? What is it, just so that you have a bigger workspace to work on than the laptop itself when you want it, kind of thing? Or is there some other hidden motive to doing this? I mean, I understand you have the 27-inch display, so my assumption is just, hey, I have a laptop. It might be useful to take advantage of this 27-inch display that I have. But what's the motive?
So really, it's a problem that I have because the laptop I has only has 2 ports. So I got 2 USB-C ports. That's what I got. And I need to make this work with 2 USB-C ports. So the computer that I use is, the main computer that I'm using is the MacBook. So, right, so that's what I'm using day to day. And I have this old iMac and I'm like, yeah, I need to use this. I would love to use this as a screen, but I also use it as a computer. So essentially what I'm trying to solve is, yeah, I have a MacBook that I use as my main machine, but I would love to extend that display without buying a dedicated display and without having to rely on a hub for something like more USB peripherals or file transfers between the other machine or Ethernet. So that's really why I'm doing it, is there's only 2 USB-C ports, so I got to make the most of them. And it says it can do everything in that port, so I'm really trying to test that theory.
Okay, so question. You said 2 USB-C ports, so, and you said MacBook. So I assume you mean MacBook Pro?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. A MacBook Pro.
Okay, because...
Like, yeah, I mean, like, I guess I should use a correct moniker, but it's a MacBook Pro without the touch bar.
Okay, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, the other podcasters of the world, what they call the MacBook Adorable, but essentially that's the one port one. You're on the 2 port one, which is MacBook Pro, but it's okay.
Which they call the MacBook Escape because it has a physical escape key.
Yes, that's true. Okay, cool. Well, that's understandable. Do you find a lot of the time you need more than the 2 ports in terms of, you know, you're at home and you're are you plugging stuff into it all the time, or is it?
No, that's why I don't want to have to like resort to getting like a hub. Like I don't want another thing that I have to worry about. If I can connect this one cable to this one other device and one cable to charge, like that's all I really want to do. I don't need the ports any time other than, you know, when I want to extend the display. And like I said, it's really more of a convenience. Like I have Wi-Fi, so I could rely on Wi-Fi for everything, but Wi-Fi is not the best when, you know, you just want something to work seamlessly all the time. Like, everyone knows Wi-Fi can be flaky, and especially when you're in like an office setting, Wi-Fi can be particularly annoying because there may be competing base stations, or it's a Wi-Fi that you can't necessarily, you don't have fine control over the signal and other variables like interference and noise as you do with like your home Wi-Fi. So really, I just need a wired Ethernet connection, and I need to be able to use that for both the iMac and for the MacBook. So it's really funny the way I've been doing it, because I have Ethernet on the iMac, and then I have a Thunderbolt to Ethernet adapter also on the iMac. So basically, the iMac is getting two sources of internet. And I set up a Thunderbolt bridge for the Thunderbolt port for the Ethernet on the iMac to the Ethernet, or sorry, to the Thunderbolt USB-C on the MacBook. So basically, I'm like tunneling these, you know, Thunderbolt over IP or IP over Thunderbolt through this connection only for the Thunderbolt over Ethernet, so I don't mess with the iMac's, you know, other port and mess with the internet there. So I'm getting, you know, IP addresses, and I'm able to route traffic just fine, but whenever I need to do any uploads, it just chokes like crazy. Any upload to anything other than the iMac is just choking. So I don't know if it's, I have to specify like a default route to make sure that like I'm not, you know, just dropping packets left and right, or if it's a bandwidth thing where there's just not enough bandwidth on the bus to support the upload. Like, it's prioritizing, you know, download for everything and not really caring about the upload as much, because like, hey, you shouldn't have to upload that much, but sometimes I do. Sometimes I have to upload a file to a thing that's not the iMac, and it takes a really, really long time, and that's really annoying. So I don't know. Like I said, this is my tech struggle right now. So I'm welcome to suggestions that don't involve me having to put a hub in between or resorting to just using Wi-Fi.
Okay, fair enough. So the next thing here is a newest tech addition in your life. So I don't know that you were talking physical thing in your life, I assume. What is the newest tech addition in your life, Adam?
I don't have one. I don't think we got anything tech related in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, your last big one was the iMac, right? Didn't you get a new iMac?
Yeah, that's the iMac that I'm sitting at right now, which is a 5K iMac. So it's not the iMac that I'm trying to, you know, do this whole shenanigans with a Thunderbolt bridge with, but that was the last big addition to the tech life. And I'm like racking my brain to think of anything that we bought, you know, that's worth mentioning, but there's nothing even notable that's been tech related. So I kind of want to just resort to you, because I know you've got, you know, the cash to throw around. Like, what's your newest one?
The cash to throw around.
Throw on a fire. I mean, I don't know.
So the latest tech thing. So, I mean, I'm not going to call this 100% a tech thing, but this is like an accessory to my tech thing. I'm trying really hard to change my my habits around wallet carrying. I know we talked about wallets in an episode a while back when we talked about our daily carry.
Front pocket crew for life.
Yeah, so I am trying to, essentially what my workflow has changed to was, or originally it was, you know, wallet in back right pocket, phone in front left, no case on it, and keys, and usually AirPods in the back left. So literally every pocket full of something. And what I have kind of gotten down to is AirPods in the backpack that goes with me everywhere. The wallet now lives in the car in the center console with all the main cards in it if needed. But with me is only the phone and an ID, one credit card, and one and then the main debit card, essentially. So the car has like all the like Costco, you know, like those punch cards. If you go to a restaurant and they're like for lunch and they're like, you know, you get your punch for your 10 things and then you get your free item or whatever. You know, all those sort of just miscellaneous AAA insurance, all that good jazz is all just kind of in the car. And 99% of the time, the car is with me. So it's not a big deal. But so I switched to, and I'm trying, the leather folio for the iPhone X. And I'm giving that a whirl. And I did it in the product red. So that is something that I'm I'm giving a whirl, and I'm about 2 weeks into it right now, and so far so good. I'm pretty happy. So I'm basically walking around with a folio phone case and just the car keys right now, and that's kind of, I guess I would say, my newest tech struggle, tech addition to my life. Physical, I don't know. It was probably, I bought myself a pair of headphones a while back. I bought, that's probably the last main one. Headphones, probably, which was, I don't know, 2-3 months ago. So nothing crazy, but those were just something that I guess you wouldn't even classify as a big tech addition, because you're just a headphone whore.
Yeah. See, I was hoping that you'd be able to carry this section because, you know, you usually have more toys than I do. You really let me down and given me just a case as your latest tech addition is, I'm not feeling too happy about that. And yes, I try a lot of headphones. It doesn't mean I'm a whore. Like I said before, don't slut shame me for trying a bunch of headphones to see what I like. It's my ears. I can do what I want. My ear's my choice. So just stop. Let's see.
Yeah, so I guess hardware-wise, I mean, okay, so let's rack like 6 months here real quick. So I did purchase a HomePod. I have a HomePod. That's in there. And going back, I mean, late last year I got a new computer. But I mean, it's been a while, man. Like I haven't dropped any major dough, but like a HomePod isn't cheap, and neither is like an iPhone 10, but I bought one of those in September. So, you know, I mean, it's been a while though, in the sense that like, there's been nothing in the last like 60 days or 90 days that I'm just like, oh my God, I spent a ton of money and it was great.
Wait till that tax return is burning a hole in your wallet. And then I'll see what you get.
No. Taxes are filed, taxes are done, and I have the money, and I'm not using it. I'm a responsible individual.
Yeah, uh-huh. Sure you are.
Yeah, I am. I am. I saw something the other day about, like, it was something like 80% of Americans get a refund, and that, like, something like, of the 80% of Americans get a refund, it was like, something like 80% of those people plan on using it towards credit card debt, because of course our country is in debt all the time to credit cards, and they plan on using it for credit card debt, but like only like 10% of people actually do follow through with that. And I was like, wow, that's really sad that like everybody plans on it, but they get this, you know, tax return of, you know, whatever, a couple thousand dollars or however much money it is. If you've got kids, it's going to be bigger. If you got, you know, house or whatever it is, however much money you get, even if you get to zero or you get to 500 and you get some amount of money and they plan on using it for credit card debt, but they don't. I think that's really sad. That shows our culture.
Spoiler alert. They don't.
Yeah. That's definitely not me. I don't have to worry about that. Thankfully.
You don't have to worry about that. Don't you still have student debt? But you're not going to pay that off. Those are in installments. There's no point in paying those off early. There's no benefit to that.
Yeah, I mean, the interest rates on those things, man, they're like, it's like questionable whether you should even refinance them, because you're not even going to get like that much lower. It's like, cool, I saved $7 or like $5 each payment. You know, I mean, $5 over 10 years, I get it. It adds up. But at the same time, is it worth all the hassle of it? Probably not. So I don't know. Yeah, I usually throw a little bit towards that and you know, save. It's worth it.
So Lou, how are you diversifying your funds? How are you investing your tax return?
Well, actually this year, I guess I would say I'm not doing anything super.
That was a joke, man. This is boring. No one wants to hear this. It's a tech podcast.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't pick up on that cue. You got to be more literal with me.
A little more literal, yeah. If you were going to say that you were using some AI, you know, to diversify your refund for you, then that would have qualified, but I'm sorry. You should have seen the way I was looking, because I was like twiddling my fingers together like Mr. Burns, you know, from The Simpsons. You know The Simpsons, right?
Yeah, like I know of them. I don't know who Mr. Burns is, but I know of, like, if you showed me the image of like Bart, or what's his name? Is his name Bart? I don't
yeah,
know.
His name's Bart.
Anyway, yeah. If you showed me like the graphic of the show, I would look at it and go, "Yes, that's The Simpsons. I know what that is."
Like, could you pick Mr. Burns out of a lineup? No. Could you pick Bart Simpson out of a lineup? Yeah, totally.
Well, so that actually begs a good question. Like, if you put like five of those animated characters next to each other, I probably would not be able to pick out Bart. But like, there's something iconic about the like theme or the style that The Simpsons is drawn in, and so like, of course, I can look at it and go like, "Oh, that's The Simpsons." Just so you, like, you can look at like, you know, Buzz Lightyear and say like, "Oh, that's you know, Toy Story." You know, it's like there's a theme to Pixar and the way those movies are created, and I don't know, you just pick it up. Like, you don't even need to have necessarily seen the movie if you've seen the poster art for it.
Well, yeah, there's a visual style, right? And they very much follow that in The Simpsons. And then Futurama is the other one, also by Matt Groening, who they follows the same style as The Simpsons. So those characters look very similar. Maybe that's something I'll do. I'll pull together all of these, you know, like mugshots of characters from The Simpsons and Futurama and see if I can have you identify which ones are from Simpsons and which ones are from Futurama. And I can guarantee you would probably like lose that that contest. I mean, I'll give you the robot one because that one will probably be easy to figure out which one that is, but maybe I'll do that. That sounds like fun. That I'm giving myself homework and I don't like doing that, but maybe I'll have to do that.
Yeah, you give it a whirl. I have no clue what I'm in for, but give it a whirl.
Anyway, so you got your tax return. You bought a case most recently. You got a HomePod. Oh, the one thing I was going to say is you were shaming me for having so many headphones, and I neglected to say that I did get two new speakers recently because they were at Costco. So I got some Yui Wonder Booms, just the little, you know, sphere-like speakers that don't sound amazing, but are kind of shockproof, waterproof, everything-proof, mainly just to take to the beach because the weather up here has been getting much nicer. So it's now time to bring on the weekend beach trips every weekend. So I needed a speaker that if it got wet or if, which this has happened before actually, if we camp out too close to the shoreline and a big wave comes up and starts, you know, cascading over our chairs and towels and umbrella and backpacks and everything, I want to make sure that the speaker that's playing us nice little beach tunes doesn't go on the fritz. So I needed one that was waterproof. So I picked up a pack of two of those at Costco and just have one in the house just because they came in a two-pack, man. So, like, why? Just buy in bulk, you know, Costco. One's in the house and then one's attached to the little beach cart that we have. So it just goes with us whenever we go to the beach. So I guess that's the newest tech addition that I have is a speaker. So don't shame me. I know it's not a headphone, but it's still technically a speaker. And yes, that's the latest thing that I've gotten.
Nice. Okay. Cool. That's I've seen those before. Those are kind of cool. They seem they're priced at a point that it's like, I don't want to say disposable, but you know what I mean. It's like it's an easy like impulse buy. You know what you're getting. You know you're kind of getting a decent speaker that, and the fact that it's like essentially quote unquote life proof or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's like if it drops, if it gets a little wet, and if there's some sand on it, it's probably just going to keep working, which is nice.
Bluetooth speakers are nice, right? They're very convenient, and that's the thing is I have Bluetooth headphones, right? I have a pair of AirPods, I have a pair of, you know, over-ear headphones, I have a couple, well, many, too many pairs of Bluetooth over-ear headphones. But like you said, it's nice having that convenience in something that you can just toss wherever and not worry about it. So before we were taking kind of one of the other Bluetooth speakers that we had that we actually kind of cared about, right? It was kind of a design that we liked and it didn't travel outside of the house that much. So having something that can be dedicated to just travel outside, still give you at least decent sound is kind of stretching it because these things are very small. They don't carry a lot of range. It's a lot of high tones, not a lot of mid tones and not a lot of bass. It's very washed out but it's Bluetooth audio and I just need something for the beach and I'm not looking for like audiophile quality at the beach. I just want something to, you know, drown out some of the noise of other families or just kind of set the mood for being, you know, with your family on the beach. Like just have something to listen to. It's it's great to listen to the waves. So I'm not saying we, you know, run it all the time, but it's nice to just have a little, your own little beach party. And like you said, having one of these things that are at a cost point that, or a price point that is low enough to consider like, yeah, cool, that's not a lot of money. And even if it doesn't sound great, awesome, it's still life proof. I can still throw it on the ground and not worry about it. It can drop in the pool and not worry about it. So yeah, there's something to be said about that, but audio quality, not so great, but the convenience of having sound anywhere you go or having a way to output sound anywhere you go is very nice. And you know, what's funny, this kind of brings up another thing is I was going through and looking just at the Bluetooth connections that I have set up. And I don't know if you've ever audited that list, Lou, like just in your Bluetooth, like connection settings, like on your phone, but I have like 6 or 7 things in there. And two of them are like, okay, one is the AirPods, that's going to be on there. The other is the watch, so that's definitely going to be on there. But then I have like the car, I have this speaker, I have that speaker, I have these other headphones, and I have another Bluetooth speaker. So I have a number of Bluetooth connections, and I never thought I would have this many. So I don't know if that's the same case for you, but my my list is growing substantially.
Yeah, so this is a really funny topic, actually, because if I recall correctly, Bluetooth has a limit on a lot of phones of like 8.
But isn't that simultaneous connections though?
Oh, that's true. I think it is simultaneous.
I don't think it cares about like how many connections you have stored for like automatic pairing. But yeah, Bluetooth only has so much bandwidth. I don't think you can connect more than a couple devices at the same time and still expect a decent amount of quality.
Yeah, you're totally right. And the other thing to consider too is, like Bluetooth 5 is like 5.0 is like knocking on the door, man. It is like shipping in some devices already. And, you know, I mean, I understand the other devices we have in our lives are going to be straggling along for a couple of years. But I mean, that certification may like actually change that simultaneous connection amount because it's becoming more common. But so yeah, I have the watch as well. I have a Beats X, and then I have my AirPods and some studio wireless. So I have 4 right now. The car is not hooked up because I have CarPlay and it's wired, so I just plug it in. So I don't have any connection there, but I definitely know what you mean. It's funny because if you asked, you know, 2012 Lou, like, hey, do you think we will ever be at a point where you will have 4 Bluetooth connections on your phone? I would be like, no. Well, I'll never need 4 things. I'll need 1 pair of headphones, and maybe I'll need to pair my Jawbone or you know, or whatever fitness tracker thing that I had at that moment. But it's just so funny because times change, and now we live in a different world, and I could easily see like 5 years from now, because my shirt and everything else will be connected.
Well, and it's not just headphones either, right? But yours and my setup, they're very much headphone heavy or speaker output heavy, right? But there are people who have like bike computers, right? I've been looking at, you know, getting a bike computer, a cycle computer for the setup that I have in the garage. And that's another Bluetooth device. And then there's other heart rate monitors that you can get. And that's another Bluetooth device. And then there's like scales and sleep sensors, and those are all Bluetooth devices. And I guess I didn't realize how pervasive Bluetooth was just in the quote unquote Internet of Things space. But yeah, just all these sensors, it's really easy and cheap to put Bluetooth in them. And Bluetooth LE, that was a huge step forward, you know, getting these devices to run for days and days and days, you know, without having to be charged all the time. Man, like, I'm in the same boat as you. I would have never thought that I would have on the verge of 10 Bluetooth devices paired to any device at any given time. I would not have seen that coming.
Yeah, it's a surprise to me too. And I don't see it ending. Like I said, it's something that I think will just continue to grow because it's just getting better and better. And I mean, even the range is getting better at this point. I mean, remember like, even like Bluetooth 3.0, and I mean, I'm sure you remember 2.0, but you know what I mean? Like just 2 versions ago, it really was pretty bad. I mean, you could be in the same room as something, but you did step more than that, like what, 30 feet, I think was the spec or something like that, or maybe it was 30 meters. I don't remember, but either way, it was pretty bad. If you were, if you stepped to the bathroom outside of your office or whatever with a pair of headphones in, and or you stepped to, you know, the laundry room from your bedroom, you were hosed. It like threw one wall and it was done. And today it's like, man, I can, with 4.0 and like range improvements, and you know, 5.0 is supposed to be even better. It's like I can walk all around the house. It's magical days we live in.
Technology, man, it's everywhere. It's always changing. It's always getting better. It's trying to improve my quality of life while also dragging it down at the same time. It's just, she's a cruel mistress.
She definitely is. So, any plans for new tech ventures in the future or on the horizon for you, Mr. Adam?
So I guess new tech ventures. On the subject of education, I need to take some more crash courses in various languages, just because I'm kind of stuck, or I don't want to say stuck, but I've kind of coded myself into a corner with, you know, what I'm doing in my job and kind of in my personal life. So I need to kind of expand my repertoire of, you know, programming knowledge and languages. So I think for me, the name of the game for the last half of the year is going to be like brush up on more programming, like just start getting a little more heavy into it and learning more languages. So booting up that treehouse and kind of jumping into a couple languages there. And I think that's going to be kind of a big focus for me, and no particular reason, like I said, other than trying to find better ways to solve problems, right? It's, you can get to a point where it's like, oh man, I need to solve this problem. And you can do that with one language. And let's say it's the language you're comfortable with. But to do that, you have to kind of jump through hoops and do workarounds here, workarounds there. And it gets kind of messy really quick. Whereas like, hey, maybe if I knew enough about this other language, I could quickly, you know, deploy something here and do this. And I think just having that flexibility would be beneficial to kind of my personal life, as well as my professional life. So I think that's kind of my next tech venture, is kind of more programming, just a crash course in a breadth of different languages.
Okay. Do you have like a short list? Like, is there like a top three or anything that are kind of piquing your interest?
I know I need to brush up on JavaScript. I don't say that's like a top, you know, a want to do, but I definitely need to brush up on some JavaScript. I kind of wanted to get into Swift more, because I took, you know, just kind of the intro stuff when Swift was kind of released, and when Apple released Swift Playgrounds, I messed around with that. I kind of want to, you know, dig into Swift a lot more. So I'd say JavaScript, Swift, and then I actually really want to get into the markup language for Docker and other virtual machines, which is what YAML, I think is what it is, or however they pronounce it, but YAML. So I actually really need to get into that too. So I think those would be my top three, just because that covers a pretty large area, right? JavaScript is a lot of web-based, you know, programming, as well as, you know, you can run some server-side stuff with that, but that kind of covers the front-end aspects, some Swift for kind of, you know, the core level, just items and just general knowledge in terms of like, I guess, I don't know. I might try Swift on Linux too. Like that's always kind of piqued my interest. So maybe I'll start getting into some of that. And then the Docker stuff, just because nowadays it's so nice to just be able to spin up a virtual machine for anything that you want to do. And especially with like Homebridge setups and web server setups and talking about like our SFTP server, right? I want to move that over into a Docker container. And I just want to kind of move a lot of stuff into virtual containers rather than actually running on a server full-time 24/7. So YAML will definitely help me with that.
Okay. Very cool. That's exciting. I want to, especially YAML. I've never heard of YAML. So knowing a little bit more about that would be interesting. I want to, once you dive into that, I want to pick your brain maybe a little bit.
YAML ain't markup language.
Well, as far as new tech ventures for me, So I'm at an interesting inflection point where it really, really looks like, you know, probably in the next year, a year to 2 years, things will probably change quite a bit, in the sense that I think, you know, like it's no surprise I'm getting to a point in my life where I think it's time to consider settling down, and so a lot is going to change. But one of the things that I guess I would say, like, I am maybe eyeing is, as you know, I've been doing the whole cycle bar thing, and it's been going well. I like it, but there's a couple drawbacks to it. One, you have to go to the classes when they set them. You know, it is what it is. It's a gym. You drive there. You pick the class that's available, you know, at your time. And there's a fixed amount of bikes and schedules and things of that nature. So it's when it's taken up, it's taken up. That's it. You know, there's no, you know, getting in. You jump on the wait list or whatever and wait. And that actually does happen because there's only a few really good instructors that a lot of people like. And so getting, you know, good talent is hard. And the other thing I find is that the schedule is sometimes demanding or doesn't meet your schedule. You know, it's like, oh, cool, we're going to have a class at, you know, 8 to 9 a.m. in the morning on a Monday. Well, that may not work for me. Or maybe their last class is from 5:30 to 6:30. It's like, that may not work for me either. And so it can be hard to sometimes fit that in. And so I have looked hard at maybe considering down the way here a Peloton, which I don't know. Are you familiar with that name at all?
I've heard the commercials. I've seen all the stuff. So yeah,
it's kind of, I don't know that I would say it's kind of like the Tesla of, I feel like, of like workout at home. It's like, you know, the way their service is set up, they do this like, you know, white glove delivery kind of thing where they bring it to your house, set it all up for you, show you how it works. But the premise is it's a cycling bike, for, you know, use at home. I think the big kicker for a lot of people is that it still requires a subscription. So it's not something that you buy the bike and you're done. The bike is of course not cheap because it's a piece of technology in the sense that not only are you buying a bike, but there's like a, I don't know, it's probably like 18 to 20 inch monitor, like right in front of your face while you're on the bike. And, it allows you to, you know, basically jump into classes that are being hosted in their studios in, like, I think it's like New York. I don't know if they're doing them in London and in like LA or something too, because I know two people that have these, and I've been able to look at the quote unquote app that they have, and the app that they have is, I mean, it's just really cool. Cause you can, there are classes that are as little as 10 minutes long, and there are classes that are as long as 90 minutes. So there's options, but, you know, from that short to that long. And the other thing that's really cool is that the classes are offered all the time. There's essentially like any time of the day you can think of, there's pretty much a class that will fit your schedule, because of course it's much easier to host a class when, you know, you're just based out of a place and you get good talent in a big city, but you're hosting that around the world. And the number of people in the class isn't capped. So a lot of these classes have like 1,000 people in them or something like that, you know, and so you're really pushed against a bunch of people. But I don't know, it's just a thought on the horizon and something that I'm interested in looking into more.
So you remember how I said your tax return would be burning a hole in your pocket and that you were going to buy something? This is what I was talking about, man. This is exactly what I was talking about. Because believe me, I've looked at these and I'm looking at the website again right now and it's awesome, right? You talk about the classroom going virtual. Well, this is like the gym going virtual, right? Where you basically take it to a point where you can hop on any time, you know, hop on with other people or just hop into a pre-recorded class and get a variety of different things all with one machine. I definitely see the appeal. Trust me. I am frugal as fuck, as you like to say, and I have a cycle trainer that is, oh man, a fraction of the cost that this Peloton is. But if I had the money and that money was burning a hole in my pocket and I was looking to getting more into cycling, this is definitely something I would do. Because one thing I've learned over the last, you know, 6 months is that health is pretty important and you feel a lot better when your body is, you know, feeling healthy and you're in shape. So if this is something, like, I would fully support you throwing money at this because it's for a good good reason, right? It's not a frivolous purchase. It's kind of like it's an investment in yourself, right? You're putting that money essentially back into you. And that sounds really cheesy, but I think you should do it because I kind of want to use it just to see what it's like.
So, I mean, there is a degree of, you know, consciousness in my head that says I I'm a numbers person, so I do like a cost benefit analysis or whatever you want to call it, like what's the other term, SWOT or whatever, like strengths, weaknesses, and I don't even remember the other
part. Yeah, mine's like if I paid $1 a day, you know, and it how long is it going to take me to pay this off, and is it worth it for me to pay $1 a day for X number of days to pay this thing off? And that's usually how mine goes.
Yeah, so you have to consider like what we're paying for the membership we have now, and you have to consider that we're essentially double paying. You know, between me and my girlfriend, we're you know, it's two of us have to go, and so this would essentially save us even with the subscription. You know, you deduct out the subscription that you have to pay, which is $40 a month. It would be saving us around $160 a month in gym fees. So when you start to like,
dude, this is a no brainer. Just buy it now. Like you have the money from your tax return. Just buy it, pay it outright and pay the $40 a month, you know, for the classes. And as long as your girlfriend and you don't want to do a workout at the same time, which that hasn't been a problem for my wife and I, cause we're like, yeah, you work out, do your thing. I'll work out, do my thing. We don't have to like watch each other, you know, work out and lift weights or cycle. Like that's not a thing. So just do it.
That's awkward. I mean, and that works out really well for me because, you know, you bring up that point and it's something that crossed my mind, of course, but like when I think about it, in all honesty, I prefer to work out at night. She prefers to work out in the morning, you know, so it would work out fine. So it's something that I guess I would say it's on the horizon. It's something I need to give more thought to. And it's something that I'm not 100% committed to yet, but, there's a time and a place. And, if it comes, man, I'm pretty committed, and I think I can get her to see the light at the end of the tunnel and the benefit to it. But and the app is like super cool. There's so much data and stuff that comes in, and of course it like connects to everything, and it's a cool concept. So they're definitely on to something with this Peloton thing. So I definitely want to, you know, when we have our own house someday, kind of have a little home gym, you know, just a little me place where I can do that. Just like you're doing now. I definitely want that. So I'll probably go to IKEA or Home Depot or whatever and buy some hard flooring that I can kind of snap together easily and make my own little home gym.
Yeah, man. I think you should do it. If they support multiple users, definitely do it.
Yep. So that's my tech venture down the line.
I like that because it's techie, but it's also not techie. So that's a very good one.
Cool. I'm glad I you know, came back from my newest tech edition with a solid newest tech venture.
But I mean, I say I'm pleased because it's something that you don't necessarily think of. Like mine's boring. Like, yeah, I want to learn, you know, some more programming languages. Like, okay, fine. Like, whatever. Everyone wants to do that. That's fine. But when you get into like, oh, I want to, you know, get this connected cycle that, you know, does these classes and is very tech focused and data sharing focused. But like I said, it's more of a focus on you, and mine is a focus on me as well, but not a focus on my physical well-being, but more my mental, I guess, well-being. But like I said, man, it's a good pick. I definitely want one. So I'm kind of a little envious right now because I'm too cheap to buy one. Mainly because the house we're renting right now, I wouldn't have a place to put it. And I feel like something this nice, like I would have to have like a dedicated place to put it. It's like you said, getting, you know, some actual hardwood and putting it somewhere and having a dedicated room. Because right now you say like the dedicated exercise room for me is the garage. And the garage also holds all of the other stuff that we have, holds all of the tools. It holds all of the bikes. It holds the car, you know, so it's very much a shared space. I would love to have my own dedicated space, and that's probably when I would look at something like this bike, but that's not in my cards right now. I'm looking in tiny homes right now, so when I look in a bigger home or live in a bigger home, then I'll probably jump on the bandwagon after I get to take yours for a spin.
Wait, so you said you look in tiny homes? You mean that in the sense that, like, you don't live in a tiny home? I haven't actually been to your house, so.
No, we live in a small house. Very, very tiny.
Okay. It is a small base square footage, but it is not one of these, like, random homes you see on, what channel is the Home Network or whatever, but HDTV?
I was banking on the fact that you would not know what a tiny home is because you don't watch, you know, television or pop culture, but this happens to be like the one time that you knew what the actual tiny homes thing was. It's like, no, I'm not in a shipping container, like in the backyard of someplace, right? Although I have thought about that for like an office, that would actually be kind of cool, or even for like a gym, right? Oh man, that reminds me, is there was actually,
the only problem with it is AC.
Yeah, as long as it does, right? I don't know, hotboxing yourself in there might be good for you. But there was something I looked up that was essentially a container that they had converted into a home gym or like a home office. So I was like, oh, you know what? That's perfect, because that's something you can literally just drop down there. It doesn't need to be fancy. It doesn't need to be super insulated. It just needs to be a place away from, you know, the main portion of your house where you can do all this sweaty, nasty, dirty stuff, or you can get away and, you know, do work or what have you. So I've definitely looked at those things, and I think they serve a purpose, but to answer your question, like, no, I would not want to live in a tiny home. I need to stretch my legs, and I don't want to have my kitchen also be my dining room, also be my bedroom. Like, that doesn't appeal to me, especially with a wife and three kids.
Yeah, so I have stayed in a tiny house, so that this is why I know of this.
Gotcha. Yeah, sorry, I know that was kind of confusing. So yeah, we're looking at tiny homes. You mean like those little like shipping containers, or you talking about like a 800 square foot, you know, house for all of your family? Like, no.
Yeah. I stayed in one. Newsflash, it was very tight for a guy my size. I'm, you know, like I sit up in bed and hit my head on the roof. So
on the loft, yeah. Like, oh, dang it.
Yeah. Oh, ow. God dang it. And like, there's nothing like seeing. Yeah. I mean, Adam, you're innately familiar with my size. I'm a big dude. A dude my size should not have to climb a ladder to get into bed. It's probably unsafe. So
that's so true, though. I mean, you say that, but when people picture like a T-Rex making a bed, you know, with his tiny little short arms.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I envisioned if you had to climb into a loft to get into your like tiny home bed.
Yeah, it was quite comical. You know, the best world was that you could sit on the shitter and take a shower at the same time, because the shitter was like in the shower essentially. So it was like, oh man, in experience, I've said I've done it, and I don't think I would do it again. And I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not against the idea of a tiny house, but like, the tiny house we stayed in was the tiniest of the tiny houses. And you know, I think the blurred lines of tiny houses can maybe get as big as like 500 square feet, and like maybe that would be okay, but it would still be tiny. But we were probably more in the like 160 square feet. Yeah, so it was pretty tiny.
No tiny homes.
Yes. So I guess we have a little bit of exciting news on the horizon. You want to share?
Yeah, so we've been doing, you know, this tech podcast for a little while, and it's a great way, you know, to keep in touch with you, and it's a great way to kind of like get an outlet of all like my tech woes kind of out into the ether and just kind of bounce ideas off of a very large audience, right? Like taking that social interaction and taking it virtual. So it's been great for me, but the one thing, Lou, that you can't give me is you can't give me any dad humor, and you can't, you know, I can't tell you all the struggles about my kids and have you relate to that in any way, shape, or form. And that's a big part of my life. So the exciting news is that we have another podcast that is joining our little family here, and it is aptly named Casual Dads. So Casual Dads will launch in May. So be on the lookout for that. We'll update the website with everything. But it is with myself, and the other host we have is Phil. And Phil is a guy that I've known and worked with for a couple years now, and he is a newer dad. His daughter is, I don't even know how old, but she's not not old enough to be two. I know she just turned one not too long ago because we went to the birthday party. I should know these things, but hey, too casual. So he's kind of a newer father, and with me having three kids, there's definitely a lot to talk about, and we kind of fill our podcast with a bunch of dad jokes and just kind of sharing our experiences as dads. And being that I'm pretty casual and he feels like he's sort of casual, we kind of just keep it cash and have a good time chatting about dad stuff. So if you're a father out there and you kind of like talking about dad stuff, take a listen to the podcast. Like I said, we'll update when we have everything in place, but the website will be casualdadcast.com.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited just to listen. You know, I mean, no kids yet, but I have a sort of a nephew, and so that's through my girlfriend. I have a nephew, if you will, but he's three, and he's a ball of fun, and it's just kids are fun, and some of the things that they come out of their mouth sometimes you just. I had a good story this week where my girlfriend was driving him somewhere, and she comes over the freeway, and you know, the unexpected things kids say. He just says, "Oh my God." And he's like 3 years old, and she wasn't expecting him to say that. And clearly he had heard it from mom or dad at home. And she was really surprised that he used it. And she said, "What?" And he said, "Look at the traffic." And he's 3 years old using it in the perfect, like, sense and everything. Oh, kids are great.
You can tell the parents have driven with that kid in traffic one too many times.
Yep. Welcome to Southern California.
That's true. There's a lot of traffic there.
Yes, there is. So it was a comedic moment for sure. And then there's, you know, great sweet moments. You know, he can't say my name, so he calls me Mr. Wu. As in it's W-U, but you know, we had a sweet moment not that long ago. We were at Chick-fil-A having lunch, and he was just kind of like, "I love you, Mr. Wu." And I was like, "Aw, thanks, buddy."
Oh, that's so nice.
Kids are great.
Until they're not. And that's kind of what we talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be able to give them back, right?
Yeah. You're talking about all the rosy sides, and we don't talk about the rosy sides.
Yes, very true. Very true. Well, I look forward to that. Cool. Well, I'm happy to have you back, and we'll definitely get in our normal cadence again of recording on a weekly basis. And I would say to the listeners, just keep an eye on the website, because Casual Dads will be launching soon.
Are you really happy to have me back, Lou? Or was that just a lie that you told people?
No, I'm happy. I'm happy I don't have to scissor edit the entire podcast, so there's that too.
Ooh, that's a burn. I don't know, man. I did a lot of clicking a little bit, you know, so we'll see if that comes through.
Yeah, clicking I'm not so concerned about. Like, if you're keyboard typing or clicking, like, I mean, I get it. Like, sometimes you Google something in the middle of the podcast or something like that, so... Your keystrokes are really quiet if you ever do it, because I haven't really ever heard you do much that way.
Yeah, it's that low travel on those Magic Keyboard 2s or whatever they are.
Yeah, what you've learned about me is that I have not a creative strand in my entire body.
Dude, it's rough, man. Like some people have to be at least a little creative, but. It's no, man. Like, you can't. There's like some mental block.
I didn't get the gene. Like,
it's kind of painful, you know?
Pass. I'm a very literal person. Like, I have no creativity. I can't draw. I can't paint. I can't be creative with writing style or anything like that. I'm a very black and white facts person. And so, yeah, it's like, this episode's about education.